we finally got the debut of 19-year-old phenom, projected superstar Zion Williamson. And after a very quiet first three quarters, he scored 17 straight points during a three-minute span in the fourth. He was then pulled with just over 5 minutes left in the game because he was on a minutes restriction. Pelicans would go on to lose to the Spurs. Here's Zion after the game on getting pulled.
It's very hard. I'm 19, honestly. In that moment, I'm not thinking about longevity. I'm thinking about winning that game. So it was very tough. Me personally, I didn't want any restriction, but I'm not a doctor or a trainer, so I just got to listen to them.
Nick, do you think injuries are the only thing that can really keep Zion from being a Hall of Fame talent?
Oh, yeah, I'll take a step further. Injuries are the only thing that will keep him from being an all-timer. And the NBA is a little different than the NFL. The NFL, if you are in the Hall of Fame, you are an all-timer.
Yes.
The NBA, all the players in the Hall of Fame are great, but there is a separate wing, at least in my brain, of the greatest of the great. Remember the NBA old top 50 list? I think they're going to come out with a 75th anniversary top 75 list. There are a lot of guys not included in that are in the Hall of Fame. Zion can be in one of those front rooms of that pyramid if he stays healthy. His floor is Blake Griffin. And I like Blake a lot. Blake has had an awesome career. Blake Griffin will be a Hall of Famer. That is not an insult to Blake. His ceiling is win a couple of MVPs. He showed you last night, Brian, that I like that he made threes. I don't think he's going to be some knockdown shooter his rookie season. But what he showed you last night by taking those threes, by having the presence of the moment, was that, he also has that thing that I thought he had at Duke. I had every reason to believe he had at Duke, but it's college, so it's a little different, which is a feeling of the moment and what the greatest of the great have, which is, it's my time. And this is a big moment for me, so I need to live up to the quality of the moment for me. I watched Kevin Durant in his final game ever in Seattle, his rookie season. People forget, Durant was drafted by the Seattle Supersonics around the age Zion was, 1 year in college. And you saw him have this unbelievable career at the University of Texas. And the fans were, if I'm remembering it exactly correct, they were trailing in the fourth quarter. The fans were upset because the team's leaving. And KD is a 19-year-old kid, not only channels the moment, but gets the crowd involved, hits big shots, doing the Save Our Sonics thing. And in that moment, I'm like, this guy, in addition to having all the tools he had, he's special. And Zion took him 14 minutes to figure it out. And then in that burst in the fourth quarter, it's like, everything I wanted to believe about him, to me, he confirmed last night. The only thing that can derail him is injuries, which is why the knee was so concerning when it happened before the year even started. But, I mean, he checks every box you want for the next great NBA superstar.
One of the things I hate about our superstars, and this is our business that we're in, is that we're trying to put this guy that's played one game in his professional career in the Hall of Fame box already. And I think when you talk about his talent, you talk about how exciting, how athletic, the smile, how charismatic he is, obviously he has the ability to make it to the Hall of Fame. He has a long way to go. Here's a couple things that I loved about what happened last night and the kind of show. First, he said, Canty mentioned it earlier, after the game, I love what I was able to do, but I wanted to win the game. That's the most important thing. The second thing is that he has a bunch of vets around him that are vested in him maturing and be better, because they understand, even though Ingram has been going off, even though Ball has played very well, Drew Holiday has done a great job, they understand if this guy gets on the right track, then this team goes to the next level, competes for that 8th seed, maybe the 7th seed in their conference. And the last thing was, when they're at that press conference, there was a reason why Drew Holiday was sitting beside Zion. Yes. Because he wanted to make sure that this 19-year-old was leading and going in the right direction. When you have vets that kind of want to shape your future and you are as athletic and exciting as he is, it's hard to not be on that same type of Hall of Fame pathway that I think he is on already.
And I think the NBA needed an injection of someone like Zion this season. We don't have the exact same storylines we had last year. He is all of that wrapped up in one, as you said, charismatic individual. It's must-see TV. You're going to watch him play.
And two other notes quickly. One is this. I understand basketball analytics as well as just about anybody. I get why the game has become three-pointers and layups, why the mid-range game is gone, why people, you are incentivized to find the next Steph Curry more so than just about anything else. I get it. it ain't great for the game. Mm-hmm. What makes basketball so aesthetically appealing and the most beautiful game of all the games to me, as far as just watching it from afar, is you've got this almost ballet going on with freak show athletes. We needed another freak show athlete in this league. We needed another guy who's not only bigger and stronger and who is that, but can jump higher. Mm-hmm. The ability to momentarily fly is what differentiates basketball players from all the other sports. And it doesn't make them better or worse, it's just different. And the league has incentivized finding guys who can shoot from 35 feet. And I love Trey. And Luke is obviously my young adult Slovenian son. I love their games. They can't get you out your seat the way this kid's going to be able to. And I know it's premature, and we always want to say, is Patrick Mahomes a Hall of Famer? Is this guy? In basketball, you can sometimes see it when they're 17.
Yeah.
And because there's less of a risk of catastrophic injury than football, you're less dependent on your teammates than in football. Guys that are 99 out of 100 on potential, occasionally there's a Derek Coleman, usually they hit. And I can't wait to watch him. I can't wait to watch him fly up and down the court, almost literally. TurboTax is here to help this tax season by making tax filing easier for you. They've made it their mission to give you all the tools and advice you need to get your taxes done with confidence, like making uploading your W-2 as easy as taking a picture. Just use your phone or tablet to simply snap a picture of your W-2, then watch your information appear in the right place in your tax return. You can be sure you're filing your taxes correctly while at the same time making sure you're getting the best possible refund. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
Here, first things first, we are just barely by about that much joined by Super Bowl champ
what
Chris
up,
Canty.
What's up, man?
Should we just peel back the curtain for a second? He sat down, no joke, about a fraction of a second before we came back on.
Which has never happened. Canty's been on the show 300 times.
Right.
It's never been anything but early.
Is it a good story?
Yeah, because I'm usually on Tom Coughlin time, right?
Yeah.
You got to be five minutes early in order to be on time.
Yep. Yeah.
If you're on time, you're actually late.
Yeah. So,
but I can blame the George Washington Bridge for that this
morning. Well, see, there you go.
I got
it. Ain't going to happen when you get that penthouse in the city you've been talking about, bro. Come on.
There you go, man.
I'm just telling you, it's just another reason. Come on, move.
Listen, man,
town.
I'm just like George and Weezy. I want to move up to that deluxe apartment in the sky.
Yeah.
Canty, let's talk about your guy. After 16 seasons, two Super Bowl wins, two Super Bowl MVPs, Eli Manning has decided to hang up the cleats. The Giants quarterback will hold a press conference tomorrow to officially announce his retirement. The 39-year-old steps away holding almost every passing record in team history. Canty, you played four seasons with Eli. You won your Super Bowl 46 ring with Eli. Is he a Hall of Famer?
There's no question in my mind he's a Hall of Famer, Jenna. And I know a lot of people will point to the iconic moments that he had in Super Bowl 42 and Super Bowl 46, the throw to David Tyree, the helmet catch, which set up the Plaxico Burress go-ahead touchdown, and then, of course, the throw to Mario Manningham in Super Bowl 46 right along the sideline in between two Patriots defensive backs. I mean, B-Dub, you played in the league a long time. You know how hard it is to drop that ball into the receiver under those circumstances with that amount of pressure. But Eli Manning has always been able to deliver, especially when the lights are the brightest and the pressure is the greatest. And to me, competitive greatness has to account for something. You look at those two Super Bowl runs. I mean, those were awesome runs. He was on the road for all of the games during the Super Bowl 42 run, on the road for three of the four games in Super Bowl 46. Everybody looks at those big moments in the Super Bowl. But if you go back to 2011 and you look at the NFC Championship game where Eli Manning took an absolute beating against the San Francisco 49ers. I think they sacked him six times, over 20 pressures, but he had over 30 completions in that game. And of course, he delivered when it mattered the most. So for me, you can look at the metrics, and Eli Manning is in top 10 of a lot of statistical categories as far as passing goes. But when you actually look at what he did and what he meant for the Giants organization, I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find anybody that did it better.
What was he like as a teammate?
Well, I mean, he was the consummate professional. I mean, he was, and I know it's cliche, but he was the first one in the building, last one to leave, and he went about his business in a very workmanlike fashion. You had no choice but to respect Eli and how he went about doing what he does. But the thing about it that makes it special is just the level of consistency, because he was the same guy every day. And especially when you talk about a city like New York, when you're under a microscope and there's a lot of scrutiny, whether he played well, whether he played bad, he was steady. And I think that that gave the team, that ability to be consistent. And I think that's a special characteristic, especially playing in this town.
The people that would say that Eli's not a Hall of Famer will say that he was never the best at his position. His best five-year span, 11 through 15, he ranked 19th in passer rating, 20th in completion, and 15th in wins. However, when I look at Eli, I look at the totality of his career. I say playing 16 years and putting up the type of numbers over 50,000 yards, over 300 touchdowns, those are Hall of Fame numbers. Those are Hall of Fame credentials. And being able to play, and you mentioned it, being able to play in certain cities with the type of media scrutiny that you get here in New York, it's just hard to do, especially with some of the teams, the ups and downs that you've had in this city. So I certainly think that Eli is a Hall of Famer. But you made a point, and I think people need to understand this. The ability to play at a high level for a long time is just hard. There's not very many people that can say, I'm going to come to work every single day, and I'm going to be the best every single day. Eli was never quite the best. However, he was consistent, to your point, then his entire career. He was very good. And I think because of that, he should be rewarded with the Hall of Fame.
Never missed a game due to injury.
Impressive.
The Iron Man streak that was prematurely ended with the Geno Smith start a few years ago by McAdoo is a part of the resume as well. I'm going to approach this from a slightly different angle because I knew this question was coming as soon as it came out yesterday, the retirement was coming. And I take these things probably more seriously than I should. And Eli is, I've said before on the show, you can make as strong of a case for as you can against. But I wanted to really like dive into it and figure out how do I really feel? And I'm not going to use the 50,000 passing yards. I'm not going to use the top 10 in touchdowns or top five, all those things, because I think the statistical argument in its totality actually works against him a bit, because never first-team All-Pro, no MVP, you know what I mean? Never had statistically regular season stats. He was a good quarterback, not a great quarterback. So how do you overcome that and become a Hall of Famer? With two of the most iconic, not games, but to your point, runs in playoff history. And that is the part that to me was the final check mark in the, you know what? Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer in my mind, because it's not just that he beat the 18-0 Patriots. It's that two rounds prior, he knocked out the best Tony Romo team we ever saw, the 13-3 Dallas Cowboys. You were on that team. The round after that, he knocked out Brett Favre's Green Bay Packers, the last time Favre had a chance to win or go to a Super Bowl with the Packers, the 13-3 Packers, and then the 18-0 Patriots. On that playoff run, he had 6 touchdowns, 1 pick, and a 96 rating. And then 4 years later, what was the route? You guys knocked out the 15-1 Packers, unanimous MVP Aaron Rodgers. Then you knock out a dominant 13-3 San Francisco 49er team in a game, like you said, he got whooped in. Mm-hmm. He got beat up en route to beating the 13-3 Patriots. On that playoff run, 9 touchdowns, 1 pick, a 103 rating. And I think it's very telling. Eli and his brother both have 2 rings. And everyone knows Peyton's one of the all-time greats. But en route to those rings, how did they play? En route to those championships, who was better? Because when we talk about those Super Bowls, we say, oh, your guys' defensive line. That's Eli, his 8 playoff games the years they won the Super Bowl. 15 touchdowns, 2 picks, 100 rating. That's Peyton the 2 years he won the Super Bowl. It's not just the Broncos year. That includes his Super Bowl with the Colts. 5 touchdowns, 8 picks, a 72 rating. He was, as great as he was in the playoff run, he was along for the ride. Eli, once the playoffs began, those 2 years, and maybe the only 2 moments of his career, he was the best guy. He was as great as your guys' D-line was, as great as those things were. He was the driving offensive force. And if you're going to overcome, to me, what is a good but not great regular season career, you have to be able to have that up there. twice I was nails in the biggest moments, and I didn't get an easy path. I was against 13-3, 13-3, 15-1, 13-3, and he did it. So I'm surprised I'm saying it, but after looking into it, I think he's got to be a Hall of Famer, can't he?
The other thing that he has as a feather in his cap is that he has two Super Bowl MVPs. Yeah. Ain't a whole lot of guys walking around with multiple Super Bowl MVPs. One of five, and if you look at the majority of those guys on that list, they in Canton. It seems like it's inevitable that Eli Manning will be putting on a gold jacket.
All right, quickly, does his career record bother you guys that he finishes
the one, well, again, the 170 and 117, the lack of MVPs, lack of all pros, all that works against him. You have to have a giant trump card to overcome it.
And that's
I think those two Super Bowl runs, not just beating the Patriots, the teams you had to beat on the road in order to get them, I think
playing
it does.
Playing in New York helps him too a little
bit. Do you see what I'm saying? He makes such a case. I'm always convinced after Nick speaks.
He's a lawyer.
Good. He's a great lawyer. So on March 18th, Tom Brady will do something he's never done in his 20-year career. He'll become an unrestricted free agent, meaning he will have full control over the next line on his NFL resume. And when asked about this, Brady said he was, quote, open-minded about playing for a team other than New England. Danny, you think the Patriots need Tom Brady more than he needs the New England Patriots?
This is a great question. I think it's really, really hard to answer. I'm going to say Brady needs the Patriots more than the Patriots need him because the Patriots have forever, right? You know, as long as the NFL exists, they can start over and they can take a year or two and they've had so much success. Now, Belichick is getting older, but you still, if he wants to, he could coach another
10 years?
Easily.
Yeah, Belichick's got more time as an elite head coach than Brady has left as a quarterback.
And as great as Brady is, and I think Peyton Manning, this may be one of the most impressive things he did at his point in his career was to go somewhere else with Denver and all of a sudden just, you know, win another MVP and start, you know, another Super Bowl and just keep the thing rolling. If you go somewhere else and you're Tom Brady and it's a totally new cast, it's a totally new locker room environment because I think Brady fits Belichick perfectly. It's this perfect marriage, and I think it's one of the reasons Belichick has been able to keep up this high intensity, high pressure, high expectation. It's our way or the highway. It's the Patriot way. You can go somewhere else. I don't know in today's player. Now, there will be an instant respect for Brady in the locker room, but that stuff gets old. I mean, how many players have we seen leave the Patriots say, that wasn't a lot of fun, and it is great to win, but on some players, it rubs them the wrong way, and they can't do it. I don't know if that travels as well as Tom Brady may think it does. And then you combine that with how hard it is to implement a new system. Does he have the right offensive linemen? Does he have the right weapons around him? Is there a defense? All of those. So I would say Brady needs the Patriots
Well,
more.
I do wonder if Brady would want that to travel. Or if Brady wouldn't say after 20 years of boot camp, I wouldn't mind a little summer camp. Yeah. You know what I mean? I wouldn't mind a little more of a lax environment. And it's not like the Patriot way wins all the Super Bowls. It's won more than anyone else. But we did see the Eagles, who had a little more lax environment, not only win a Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl beating the Patriots. But to answer the question, Jenna, neither need each other anymore. Listen, the kids are in college. The house is paid off. You've grown apart. It's time to move on for the better part of all parties. Like that's where we're
See,
at.
I don't think so. I think they need each other. And I think they'll come to that realization once the dust settles and Brady shops around and the Patriots look at maybe the draft options or look at free agent options. They're going to come back.
See, I don't think there is a strong case to be made for them staying together other than nostalgia. Other than we feel like, man, Brady should be a Patriot. And the Patriots, quarterback should be Tom Brady. Because right now the Patriots need to massively retool on offense, I believe. They need a massive retool on offense.
Is that rebuild?
No, I don't know if you ever rebuild when you've got Belichick as your coach, and you've got a defense at the level that it is, and you play in the AFC East, where you're...
Six wins right away.
I know Buffalo's coming. And Brady needs weapons. And he needs respect. And the lack of respect
from
whoever's going to employ him. I thought what happened this offseason was the most flagrant instance of disrespect since Jerry Krause and Reinsdorf, it was Jerry Krause, pardon me, with the Bulls, said to Michael Jordan, hey, win or lose, final year this year, we're breaking this thing apart. And what did Jordan say? He said, bleep you, I'll leave.
Right.
And everyone left. And then Jordan still wanted to keep playing. We know that because he came back for the Wizards. Right. But Brady had just won his sixth Super Bowl. He was a year removed from winning his third league MVP. He had gone to three consecutive Super Bowls. And he said, more soup, please. And they said, no, get the hell out of here with that. And when you look at the money, I don't think the Patriots are going to want to. They didn't want to pay him $25-plus million this past offseason when he was coming off a better year, when the team was coming off a better year. And I just want the audience to understand what $25 million means in the NFL these days. In 2020, Russ, Ben, Goff, Rodgers, Wentz, Ryan, Mahomes, and Deshaun, I'm incorporating their extensions, are all north of 30. Derek Carr, Matt Stafford, Jimmy Garoppolo, Kirk Cousins, Drew Brees, assuming he comes back, and Dak Prescott, they're all north of 25. So I've now listed 14 quarterbacks. Alex Smith, Joe Flacco, Nick Foles, Cam Newton on an expiring deal are all north of 20. So now we're at 18 quarterbacks. That's everybody. That's the whole league other than rookies and guys like Phillip Rivers or Jameis Winston who don't have contracts right now. So if the Patriots come to Brady, who made $23 million this year after making $15 million each of the previous 2 years, and offer him the same salary, so he is looking up at Joe Flacco, looking up at Alex Smith, looking eye to eye with Nick Foles, I would feel incredibly disrespected if I were him. And I would not stand for it, and he shouldn't.
But what happened to the narrative of Brady always plays for less because he wants weapons around? Like, when did that change all of a sudden? When did it become disrespectful?
Somehow it changed this
offseason. It did. It absolutely changed this offseason, which I'm a little bit curious by. I think he will realize, again, maybe it's better to play for a little bit less. And I don't think they have to retool. I think they're three pieces away, an offensive lineman, a tight end, and a wide receiver to add to that mix. I don't think it's a complete rehaul, but if they can do that and he takes a little bit less and he doesn't mind looking up because he's going to be looking at a seventh ring, then I think it's a different conversation.
But two points just quickly. One is, it's one thing to take a little bit less.
Right.
It's another thing to be the 21st paid quarterback in the league, in a 32-team league. And if you come to me, Danny, and not that you ever would, but just for instance, say, Nick, it's embarrassing. I'm in a bad spot. Can't make the kid's tuition payment this year. Can you spot me some money? And I loan you the money. And then I find out the kids are in public school and you just got a new Benz, I'm going to be angry. I gave you money, Patriots, to give me weapons. And you gave me who? Matt Lacoste? Mohamed Sanu on a cheap deal? You traded for Brandon Cooks and I loved him. And we made a Super Bowl together. And you traded him away because you didn't want to pay him. So the money Brady's been giving them, I think he would argue, has not been spent the way he would have been led to believe it would be spent.
I think the thing that Patriots fans do not want to see is Tom Brady go somewhere else, or maybe they do, and then they don't even make the playoffs. And then it adds really...
Who's they in that? Brady or the Patriots?
Well, definitely the Brady. I think Patriots fans. I think football fans don't want to see him go somewhere else and then come up shy and then have to kind of quietly
go. It's the nostalgia, but that's not... Yes. It's not our careers.
You're right.
He gets
to
do whatever he
wants. Back here, First Things First, we're now joined by former All-Pro running back Brian Westbrook.
What up, man? Good morning,
Brian.
Brody.
How's it going? Man,
get that ring out of here.
Come on, B-Dub. What you mean?
He always wants to dap up with the ring hand.
No, I always dap up with the right hand. Yeah, okay. If I give you the left, that means I'm throwing you shade. Mm-hmm. If I give you the left, I know you ain't right.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't know what we're talking about.
Well, he's right. You can't shake someone's hand with your left hand.
Oh, I mean, he would, like, hit. You'd punch him.
No, you
I already said I didn't know. I shouldn't need to follow it up. I don't know. I didn't. Let's talk some football. That I do know. Super Bowl 54 gearing up to be a barn burner. Our friends over at Fox Bet have the Chiefs as 1.5-point favorites over the Niners. It's about as close as it gets for a Super Bowl matchup. All right, Nick, what's the biggest factor that you think will determine the outcome in this?
To me, this is going to be a great game, but it's a relatively simple game to analyze. There's one factor on each side of the ball that's going to determine it. When the 49ers have the ball, how dominant will that run game be? It's not going to be as dominant as it was against Green Bay. That was historically dominant. But even with this new and improved Chiefs defense, even with the defense that was, over the final third of the season, number one scoring defense, number one red zone defense, all these things, where they have been most improved is against the pass. They still are susceptible to teams running down their throat. What the Titans got out of that earlier than they probably should have, they were having success in it in the first half of that football game. So how dominant will the Niners' rushing attack be? And then on the flip side of the ball, will the Chiefs' offensive line give Patrick Mahomes time to throw? If they do, then I don't think the Chiefs can lose. If Patrick Mahomes has a clean pocket, because there are no good answers to the questions the Chiefs offense presents, in the first playoff game, the answer that the Texans came up with is double Tyreek Hill. That led to Travis Kelce having one of the greatest games the Titans ever had in the playoffs, and he did almost all of it in just a quarter of football. The Titans' answer was double Tyreek Hill and double Travis Kelce. The response to that was, hey, remember Sammy Watkins from week one of the season and from Clemson? He's still on the team. He will have the biggest game he had since week one, score his first touchdown of the season since week one, and have the play that iced the game. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Patrick Mahomes will lead us in rushing. Because if you're going to double two guys, you're not going to be able to keep the quarterback that mobile in the pocket. So the only actual answer is, make it to where he can't go to his third option, Sammy Watkins. Make sure he can't read the full defense. Those are the two things that will determine this football game. I don't expect, Brian, the Chiefs to all of a sudden start turning the ball over. I don't expect, Brian, the Niners to all of a sudden be like, you know what, Jimmy Garoppolo, this is your moment. We're going to ask you to throw the ball 40 times. I think we know what each team wants to do, and the question is, which defense is most successful in preventing?
Yeah, we do know. We know exactly what the Kansas City Chiefs want to do, throw the football, and the 49ers, they want to run the ball. And that's why for the Kansas City Chiefs, the most important part is the offensive line. It really is going to dictate on both sides of the ball offensively what's going to happen. And so when you look at the Chiefs, they've only given up 3 sacks and 70 pass attempts in the postseason, which is phenomenal. And, of course, the 49ers, they attacked the quarterback. They've had 9 sacks in their 2 games in the postseason. And so this is why it's so important. If the Chiefs can protect their quarterback, that means they're going to score points. We know that. If the Kansas City Chiefs are able to score points, that's going to kind of take the 49ers out of that run game, that dominant run game. And if you're Kyle Shanahan, the one thing you don't want it to turn into is a quarterback competition. Mm-hmm. You want to say, Jimmy Garoppolo versus Patrick Mahomes. You want to say, hey, we still want to be able to run the football, keep the Kansas City Chiefs defense off balance, and make them think that we can at least run it so that we can get that play action pass, those types of things. But if Kansas City is able to protect Patrick Mahomes, that means that secondary of the 49ers is not as effective. That means that linebacker core probably doesn't come into play. And that means Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs will probably be Super Bowl champions.
No, you're absolutely right. That Chiefs offense is explosive. It's not a matter of if, it's only a matter of when. All you got to do is go back and look at the AFC Championship game last year where they were blanked in the first half and scored 31 in the second half. So we know that this offense can score in bunches. That's why, for me, the key to this game is turnovers. If you're the 49ers, being able to get off the field by being able to turn the football over, whether that's strip sacks, whether that's interceptions, after you disrupting the timing of the passing game by hitting the quarterback and pressing the receivers, whatever you can do to get off the field, that's what you have to do. You have to try to steal as many possessions as you can for your offense to allow your offense to play with strengths, which is running the football and not asking Jimmy G to be a volume passer. So for the 49ers, I think they have to protect the football and they got to try to create some turnovers. If you're the Chiefs and you're that defense, if you can get Jimmy G to turn the football over, you know your offense can put points on the board. And if you can get up on the 49ers by double digits, then that's going to make Kyle Shanahan go away from the running game and force Jimmy G to win the football game. I think that's when the Chiefs would have the advantage.
And tell me what you guys think of this. I do think the Chiefs offense has one particular facet to it that could keep the Niners pass rush off balance, because I think we all agree the Niners' biggest strength is where they've spent all their draft picks, where they have their best players, which is that defensive front. And the Chiefs haven't used it that much this postseason, but we've seen it a ton since Andy Reid's been the play caller there, which is the wide receiver pre-snap motions that end up in end-arounds, the screen game to Damian Williams, or the wide receiver screen, those things that can make those edge rushers take an extra beat, wait, where am I supposed to go here? I think they are more equipped to really take advantage of those types of things than the typical high-scoring offense, because we've seen them do it year after year, even before Patrick was there. It was a staple of the Andy Reid, Alex Smith offense. It was a staple of their offense last season. They haven't used it quite as much this season, but I still think it's there for the taking if they want it.
Well, the Chiefs have that ability on the offensive side of the ball, but the one thing I will say is with the 49ers defensive line, especially those ends, they do a great job of setting the edge, not just in the pass rush, but also in the run game. You saw
that against the Minnesota Vikings. They were able to set a hard edge, whether it was perimeter runs or Kirk Cousins trying to get out on boots. Same thing with Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones in the NFC Championship game. So I think that Nicky Bosa does that at a high level. And, of course, Dee Ford and Solomon Thomas, those guys can do a great job of being able to set the edge. So I would say that that would be a counter in order to slow down those edge rushers. But I just think that the 49ers are so fundamentally sound, especially those guys on the defensive line, it's going to be hard for that Chiefs offense to outflank those ends.
The one way that you get fundamentally sound defenses, and you're absolutely right about the 49ers, the one way that you kind of get them out of place and you take advantage of them is to make them think. Make them think and say, hey, maybe this is something new, something that I haven't seen. And so in these 2 weeks that you have between the championship games and the Super Bowl, Andy Reid has to come up with something that says, you know what, this front four, we have to make sure that they're saying, hey, I'm getting blocked from a different angle. Maybe I'm going to wham. I'm going to do different types of things so that you can't allow them to pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. And here's the other part. The 49ers defense, I don't think enough has been said about their linebacker core. They have fast-flowing linebackers that can tackle. And so on every level, the defensive line, linebackers and secondary, they have very good players. And it's just hard to beat teams that have very good players on all three levels of the defense.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.